Live from Burbank, California, the mating ground for Masons, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, his body is his temple, Mark Maron.
Oh, man, it's a temple of Satan. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives? Body is a temple. Speaking of satanic temples, Jim Earl.
Yeah, what?
In just a second, I'll get to that. Huh? I'm going to leave you hanging. It's a tease. On tonight's show, Annabelle Gurwitch is here to talk about her. This is not an introduction, so you just wait. To talk about her her book, Fired, Tales of the Can, Canceled, Downsized, and Dismissed. And also we have Steve Buscemi, who we're going to call and talk to on the phone. Hamill on trial is one guy, and apparently he's got some sort of persecution complex, but he's going to sing some interesting songs about parenthood. Back to satanic temples. Did you see that? I saw pictures of George Bush and Vicente Fox and the Canadian Prime Minister down there at the Mayan ruins, sacrificing an indigenous virgin female to the great gods to consummate and reassess their trade agreement.
Virgin Condi Rice was there?
No. No, I'm talking about one of the immigrants that didn't make it over here was sacrificed by those three men at the Mayan temple today to consummate, reconsummate the NAFTA agreement. That's what I think. That's what I think. Did you see those pictures in
NOL? Yeah, I did. I did.
I don't think that one was there, but I think that was the missing picture. Are you with me on this?
I'm with you on that.
You wish me on this?
I wish you were with me on this.
Were you about to say, I wish you away? No, I wish I wasn't here? Come on, where were you going with that? What did this slip?
I'm not going there.
Freud, it made sense, man.
I have another candy bar.
No, let's get to the bottom of it. I didn't have a candy bar. This shame started earlier. This is completely fueled by something. It was a Mexican macaroon I bought at a bodega in my neighborhood that I think was actually loaded. I think it was made not only with lard, but with condensed milk and sugar. It was like a coconut bomb, a fat bomb. I just shoved it right in my face.
Mexican macaroon?
Not to mention last night.
It's going to be migrating through your...
Come on. Last night with the ice cream. I tell you, one of the great things about America is why I hate myself. I can stop by a convenience store anywhere. I can just stop and go, I need to reward myself at 12:30 in the morning for doing a show that I think was pretty good, though I still don't like me. So what can I do to make myself feel better for about a half hour? How about plow through a pint of Chunky Monkey and then maybe a half a pint of Haagen-Dazs toffee? Huh?
I got a donut. I stop off at the donut place.
Look at you, a rail. You're one of those guys. You're a rail.
Yeah, but you see, I don't gain any weight because I get the donut for you.
No, you don't. You can give me
for
the
your
donut.
Pain.
Do me a favor.
To feed off your pain.
Do me a favor, folks. Can you do this for me? Russ Feingold, tomorrow. Tomorrow at 9:30, the Senate Judiciary Committee will convene hearings on procedures for the review of electronic surveillance programs, my friends. Feingold's going to get to ask some questions, but I doubt the rest of those Democrats are going to ask for them on the Judiciary Committee. Could you please do me a favor and just drop a line to Senators Leahy, Kennedy, Biden, Cole, Feinstein, Schumer, who tried to stifle this thing, and Durbin, and just say, look, speak up. Apparently John Dean, Nixon's old counsel, is going to be questioned, as well as Bruce Fein, the Deputy Attorney General under Nixon. So, given that this far, folks, the Senate's treating Feingold like some sort of pariah. This is the only guy with guts in the whole damn Senate. Get behind him on this. I know that these Democrats are frightened, but there's no reason we can't publicly smack this president in the head. It's not going to mean anything necessarily, but it will be on the congressional record. So see if you can get a little fire under their butts and do that if you want. That's what I'm recommending. I'd like to see this get some momentum. I'd also like to see Feingold be president. Could that be possible? That aside, a lot happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed, peoples. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron Short Order News. Iran has told the IAEA that it will not suspend its uranium enrichment as demanded by the UN Council. Iran says it needs the uranium to produce electricity and suggested that the U.S. find a different reason to fight them, like accusing them of eyeballing their lady or bumping into them at a party and saying, you trying to start something? Problem? Got a problem? President Bush took a tour of the ancient Mayan ruins of Mexico today. After viewing the area, a visibly shaken Bush pledged millions in federal funds to, quote, help the poor miners get back on their feet. Come on.
He's completely ignorant of the whole situation behind those ruins.
I know. Man, those people were victimized.
They were, yeah.
And sacrificed.
It's a dead culture.
Whose fault is that?
I don't know.
A park in Florida has become inundated with the poop of thousands of federally protected cormorants. Cormorant poop is credited with helping to create Peru's guano islands. Tennessee's Crappalachian Mountain Range and the Bush administration's argument for going to war in Iraq. And that's Mark Maron's short order news for tonight.
Crappalachians.
Yeah, that's funny. Crappalachians. Most people are familiar with our guest, Annabelle Gurwitch. She was a co-host with Paul Gilmartin of Dinner and a Movie for, I think, 20 years.
2,000 years. Actually, we were working together before television was even invented.
Unbelievable.
And then the cameras came in and they were able to photograph us doing the show.
And that's lucky. That would explain the chemistry because it was tremendous. It was great. You guys actually look like you like each other.
It was a love-hate. You know, like we went through a lot together. There was like the year we gave up deodorant together.
That must have been a fun year for everybody.
It was
everybody.
Not a good year.
Yeah,
we really alienated most people around us, but we loved and hated. It was a great, we had a really good time sort of like foisting our opposite opinions at each other.
And okay. Well, I'm going to finish the intro now, Annabelle. She can be seen as we speak playing opposite Tim Allen in The Shaggy Dog. Her new book is why we're here, folks. It is called Fired, Tales of the Can, Canceled, Downsized, and Dismissed. It is a collection of essays about being fired. It's got people like David Cross, Sarah Silverman's in it, former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, who you just heard on the Majority Report. She's going to be signing and reading her book tomorrow night at Skylight Books, right, in Los Feliz?
Yeah, that's right. Sandra Singh Lowe will be there. Jill Soloway, writer-producer from 6 Feet Under. Hillary Carlin from Fresh Yarn. Maxine Lapidus, novelist Mark. I turned into like a game show host, Mark Haskell. Smith.
That's right. Come on down. Look who it is.
Before we go any further, I had to say something. Now you're going to really hate me more and more.
I'm about to leave.
Isn't it Feinstein, not Feinstein? I don't want to get all Jewish on you here, but it's Feinstein.
That's fine. Feinstein. You can call her what
it's
you want.
It's Feingold and Feinstein.
I happen to know Miss Feinstein.
Oh, do you?
No, I'm kidding. No, it's probably
but
Mrs. Feinstein.
Feinstein, please come to. I grew up in Miami Beach. We know our Jews, and she's actually not, I don't think. Or is she? I don't know. She doesn't.
She does strike me as like the president of the sisterhood who ran the synagogue Sunday school for a while. There was a woman named Marilyn Bromberg who was the president. And was the disciplinarian at the Hebrew school I went to, and I was always in trouble. But we don't need to Jew it up yet, do we, Annabelle?
Not yet.
It's been
Let's
5 minutes,
get to my book with this mostly Jews.
We're waist deep in Jews already. So this didn't start as a book. It started as a performance series, correct?
Actually, it started when Woody Allen hated my performance in his play. That was the beginning of it. Well, you know, look, I honestly, Woody Allen is still one of my favorite directors whose movies I will never see again. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no, it was just one of those things. I mean, truly, when you're the director, it's your choice who's in your play. And it just was like the wrong thing. It was the wrong role for me. But, you know, he's such an icon that I was crushed.
How were you cast?
I crumpled in a heap when, I went in and read for him and I did the whole thing where, you know, he doesn't look at you and, you know, you're told not to talk to him or make eye contact. I mean, it's definitely a thing. What is he, like a demon? You cannot make eye contact. You know, and this is like the rule when you're in his presence, you're told about this kind of thing and everyone follows that rule. And, but I somehow actually got cast because it seemed when I read those couple lines, like this would work for me, but.
You had two lines?
I had it. Few, I don't know, several. I didn't count, honestly.
What the hell happened?
We started rehearsal, and it was just clear this was the wrong role for me. And it was clear because he was covering his eyes and saying that I was retarded. And I'm not retarded, although I don't have any retarded.
You know what I like about this story?
Yeah, right.
You don't blame yourself, and I think that's important.
I do blame, look, I sucked in that play. I completely sucked, and I think it's a good thing, and this is what happened, okay?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's true. I might have sucked. I might have been retarded. It's okay. Everyone sucks at some time or another. I think it's a good thing to come out of the closet.
As someone who sucks. Yeah.
And what happened was after I did that, I started performing this story about, you know, the sort of the collision between you and cultural icon and, you know, just all the crazy elements of the story.
Sure, something everybody can relate to.
That's right. I hate you. Everyone has, maybe you've never been fired, Mark. But I want to mention something. Do you know what? I was on Dickie's show the other day.
Yeah.
Dickie's Mighty Morning Show.
Yeah.
And after Dana Gould and I left, he was not on the show anymore. It's not Dickie's show anymore. I don't want to scare you, but I might be like the show killer.
What do you think? When I got fired, I got this job as a concession for being fired, my friend. But I was so fired once, I was sent home from a country.
What country sent you home?
Australia sent me home.
Why were you kicked out of Australia?
Oh, that's a long story. We're not here to talk about me. I can do that anytime.
Wait a minute.
I was sent home from Australia.
Wow. Yeah. I was just purged from the Woody Allen universe.
This is funny stuff,
yes.
Because you got, like, there's a lot of funny people in here. Dave Cross, I used to live with. I used to sleep on Dave Cross' couch. And I remember when he had one of the jobs he talks about in the story in this book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was fired from a law firm. And
I remember when he had that job.
Right. And there's so many crazy things about that story. But, you know, he said he was fired for reasons he never was told. And, of course, his parting words were very David Cross-ish. Wait, I haven't had time to shit on your desk. And, I think I just fucked.
Okay, you better not do another one.
I've totally screwed up. It's too late at night. Mark, why is your show on at the point where I'm not in control of my faculties?
Let's just give it 30 seconds so we don't get complete.
Okay, I'm in trouble.
So it's all right.
So he gets fired from this law firm.
Yeah.
But conveniently, David, being the smart person that he is, starts dating someone who works at the law firm, a lawyer there.
Yeah.
She helps him put together a case together. He sues them and makes more money than he made doing the job itself, and that's how David Cross gets fired.
What are some of the other now I think I know why Dickie lost his job.
Okay,
it's just
a disaster.
You're fine. I understand. Yeah. You're excited, and you're excited to be on my show.
I am,
and it just makes you want to say dirty words.
It does.
Okay, well, don't do it anymore.
I won't.
So now, okay, what's your favorite essay?
You know what?
In the book.
Okay. I'm getting into bad territory here, but
The one that made you laugh the most. How about that?
Paul Feig's The Red Shoe Diaries, about his story about being a Ronald McDonald of Toledo, Ohio. But I love that one because it's about the seamy Babylon that is kid comedy universe.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many favorites, but right now I'm having this little love affair with Scott Carter, Bill Maher's producer story.
Yeah, I just did a show with him. He's a good guy.
Scott Carter's story is about how he had hoped to join the New York literary pantheon, but instead found himself writing softcore porn in the valley.
Yeah.
And he got fired because he started writing his copy in iambic pentameter. He was just trying to inject a little literariness to the, and they just did not.
Ron Jeremy speaking Shakespeare-ish kind
of. Yes. That didn't work out so well. Actually, Robert Reich's story is really great, and something reminded me because you were talking about the poop or something. And
yeah.
Actually, Robert Reich, former labor secretary. See, I think it's really great.
Will you want to hold it just one second, Annabelle?
I'll hold that.
Because we're going to tease it. She's going to tell us about Robert Reich and poop. I mean, man, hang out a second. It's about 20 past the Mark Maron Show. Now, back to a candy-colored clown, Mark Maron. They call me the Sandman. Huh? Huh?
I don't get it.
Yeah. We're talking to Annabelle Gurwitch about her book, Fired, Tales of the Canned, Canceled, Downsized, and Dismissed. It's a collection, people. It is an edited collection. Annabelle's got an essay in it and also writes a lot of little jokes throughout and some tidbits of information, yes?
Why, yes. As in the New York Times, it said, I have all kinds of facts about the man.
Yeah.
And it's true. I did. I thought, you know, there's all kinds of things. It's like everything from, like, the statistics I collected. Like, the week that your boss fires you, they have 100% higher risk of having a heart attack, to what all the people who've left the Bush administration have said, that they've not been fired, but they're leaving for personal projects.
Family.
For family.
Hanging out with the family.
Yeah, I mean, just ridiculous. Actually, I have a story by the former White House chef who actually was the only person who was fired during the Bush administration who said, I was fired.
Really?
Yes.
And let me just tell people who else is in this. David Cross is in the book. Dana Gould, David Cross lives in New York, and we have to get him on the show. I asked him. He hasn't come on. Dana Gould is supposed to be coming. I'm going to use it to plug my show, too.
Absolutely.
Bill Maher is supposed to be coming.
Uh-huh. Felicity Huffman, is she coming?
No, I didn't even ask her.
Jeff Garland?
Yes, we've asked him. He said he will. Uh-huh. Morgan Spurlock, we talked to on my old show. Morgan. I actually did a thing. I know him for years. Andy Borowitz,
It's a great story.
I got no problem with his story. I'm sure he's very clever and funny. There's just something that rubs me the wrong way. Brian Unger also, and Sarah Silverman, who was here last night.
Oh, sure. You got Andy Dick in the book. You've got my husband, Jeff Kahn, Emmy Award-winning writer from The Ben Stiller Show.
Yes, I know Jeff.
You got Fisher Stevens. You got...
Fisher Stevens, a character.
Sure. You got Jonathan Groff, former head writer of...
Started his writing career writing for me. Are you kidding? Yes. Short attention span theater on Comedy Central. Just saw John Groff at a birthday party the other day. It's Todd Barry's birthday party. Todd Barry, does that name mean anything to you?
Yeah. Never liked him.
Oh, really?
I'm just kidding.
He's probably listening.
I don't know him.
He's getting home going, ouch, buddy.
I don't know him. I've never met him.
Let's talk about you. Charming. Charming is what
you are. No, but see, I forgot to say. So, you know, what the thing was after I got fired, I started doing this, performing this piece about it, and then people just called me. Paul Tompkins, Dana Gould, all these people called me with their stories. We started performing this live. We did it here out at Comedy Central, and then we did it off-Broadway in New York, and then it just became a book.
Avalanche of popularity.
What would happen was people would thank me afterwards, like people in regular jobs, like, thank you. You know, they felt like I had sort of broken through this stigma of talking about being fired. And so then I put the book together as sort of like, you know, humor therapy for other people. And
it's important.
It is. Well, you know, there's...
No, I'm serious. I am not patronizing you. I believe that you're doing a service. I think people need to be able to laugh at that because some people feel ostracized. They feel ashamed.
I did. I mean, you really feel like when you're fired, like you're the only person in the whole world. So it's not true, you know. And there's actually a saying in my book. Actually, it's a quote from Quentin Crisp. He said once, if at first you don't succeed, failure may be your style. Mm-hmm. And I just think you should embrace it. I think you should embrace when originally my title for this was Crappy Jobs That Ended Poorly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really the, you know, crappy character building experience. It do make you, you know, ultimately who you are. And it sucks, but it's really good to know that all these people were also fired and there are these very hilarious stories.
It's a gift. Sometimes it's a gift. Some people like stay in jobs their whole lives that they can't stand for reasons that they just don't have the courage to leave.
No, it's true.
And it kills them.
Well, look, I mean, first of all, people have been writing me from all over the country. And in fact, in the book, I have stories from NPR. People have written from all kinds of professions, you know, to say their stories and to thank me for doing this. And I actually, I mean, it's just a crazy thing. I mean, it's the last thing I ever expected to be doing. But, I mean, look, we look at the economy right now. There are so many jobs disappearing in this country, and the statistics that the Bush administration puts out are a complete lie. We have the lowest unemployment since 2001, but what kind of jobs are out there? Not jobs that pay as much as the jobs people are losing. So this is, you know, I think a thing that's on a lot of people's
minds.
Sure,
we were talking about it yesterday with the immigrant issues. And also, a lot of the times the unemployment numbers are relative. What they don't count are the people that fall off the books altogether.
That's absolutely true.
There's millions, over a million people that just have been unemployed so long they no longer even count in the numbers.
It's true.
You know who's on the phone? Somebody who's in your book.
Oh, who's that?
It's Matt Walsh. Are you there?
I'm here, Mark.
Thanks for calling in, man. You were listening, weren't you? You said, that's Annabelle. I'm going to call.
Yeah.
Good.
I listen to Mark Maron all the time, and I was surprised to have Annabelle on there.
Hey, Matt, what a coincidence.
Really convincing. Really convincing.
Wow.
I'm not kidding.
I know, man. I know. So you're in the book. Did you realize that, or is this the first time you heard?
Say that again, Mark. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you got to turn your radio down. I know it's really, you really want to listen to me in both ears, but you can't. But you're in the book that Annabelle put together. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I saw the book, and I did see my story made the final cut. I'm very honored.
Will you hang on and tell us the story in a minute?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
All right, Matt Walsh on the phone, Annabelle Gurwitch in the studio. We're going to get that story in a minute. We'll be back on the Mark Maron Show.
Now back to a man who embraces the challenges of the outdoors, Mark Maron.
I do. Thank you, Jim. 35 past the hour. This is the Mark Maron Show. I am he. We are here letting, what's her name? Annabelle Gurwitch talk at us.
It won't stop. Someone stop her.
And on the phone.
Can she stop talking long enough to get Matt Walsh, who has a story about being fired as a singing telegram artist?
Matt Walsh is on the phone. You know him from the Upright Citizen Brigade. You know him from the Jon Stewart's Daily Show. And he's had several parts in movies, right?
I have had several parts. Yeah, I have.
Will you just name one of the parts you had and maybe do a line or two?
Oh, really?
No. Just
Matt was in Old School.
Yes, you were in Old School. That's right. Yeah. You were one of the Office buddies.
Yeah, I was buddies with Artie Lang and Luke Wilson.
Oh, God, I'm so glad we answered that trivia question.
Matt played the guy that didn't have his thinning hair.
He was funny, man. Yeah, Matt's always funny.
Always funny.
So what?
Always thinning.
You,
tell us your
right back at you.
Oh, that's nice. There was a time where we were a little tense together, but we cleared that up.
Never.
Oh, it was all me then. So tell me about the story about the fire thing.
How many times have you said that in your life? It's all me.
Oh, man. I'm saying it right now. Usually I'm saying it when I'm not saying anything. Go ahead.
Okay.
But tell your little story and let's get on with it.
You're right. I was trying to do stand-up comedy, and I wasn't a really good stand-up comic, so I had to subsidize my income. And a buddy of mine got me a job doing singing telegrams, and his basic summation of the job was, you could do it while you're high. So I'm like, great.
I am high.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I took the job, and it was terrible. And the first one I did was in a retirement home, and I made an old woman cry dressed as Cupid. And it just went downhill from there. So then I made the terrible choice of bringing friends along to, like, entertain myself. And at the time, Ninja Turtle gigs were all the rage, and you got an extra, like, $20 bump if you did, like, 15 minutes extra of Ninja Turtle gigs. So long story short, we would just choreograph fake battles with Ninja Turtles. I would be a Ninja Turtle, and my friend would be a fictional nemesis that we had assembled from, like, the various costumes in my trunk, like a piece of Zorro, a piece of a clown, a piece of a purple gorilla.
Yeah.
And he would run in and say, I'm Keith Olver, and I've come to ruin this children's party. And then I would run in and say, I'm Donatello. And we would fight, and we would crack up and just kind of silently vibrate for way too long till the parents would look at us on their floor and say, are you guys okay? It was very irresponsible, and it basically culminated with, I brought my friend Adam with me, and he said, how do I do this? And my brief description of the job as we're driving up to this, you know, wonderful house in Lake Forest, which is like a rich area of Chicago, I said, you basically just sing, you know, we'll have a fight, and you'll sing Happy Birthday, Dear Adam, or Tony, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we just leave. We'll give him balloons. He had to give him balloons because it was called Balloony Tunes. So he had to give him balloons.
Yeah.
So we had our fight, and Adam gave him the balloons, and then we sang Happy Birthday. And as we got to the point where we're supposed to say the kid's name, I had forgotten the kid's name, and Adam said Tony, because Tony was the name I threw out as an example in the write-up. And it turns out the kid's name was, like, Seth or George.
Yeah.
And soon thereafter, I had to turn in my helium tank, which was my car.
Oh. But, and even the Cupid costume had to go, too.
And the Cupid costume. But some people think I sabotaged my own career.
It's one of those stories where that could have been the seeds of what made you great.
It was terrible. I mean, I couldn't sing, and the woman, when you auditioned for her, she couldn't look at you. She would stare at the wall.
Yeah.
Because it made her nervous to look at people when they were singing to.
Well, she shares that with Woody Allen, apparently.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think
that's
Matt right. just had the wrong audience. Some no. people would have loved two stoned guys coming in and vibrating on their floor. This was what many people, not children, want to see.
Not children. Hey, no, not children.
Hey, Matt, do you still have the Mutant Ninja Turtle costume?
You know what? I don't, Mark.
Oh,
I don't.
All right.
But I have a lot of memories. And my favorite memory is my friend Rick was putting on the costume in front of a home in, like, Park Ridge.
Yeah.
And a grandpa walks up to him and says, hey, are you guys the Ninja Turtles? And he turned to the guy in full costume and said, I don't know what you're talking about.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Okay.
Take it easy, man.
Bye.
Take care, Mark.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You bet. Matt Walsh from the UCB. So now let's get back around to Robert Reich, the former labor secretary under Clinton, who is an incredibly brilliant man and apparently a really good friend of yours.
You know what? I am just very lucky to have made his acquaintance. I called him really out of the blue, and I told him about this project. And really, he's a person who inspired me to actually make the documentary that I made. All based on this book. What happened was, when I was collecting stories, these funny stories for the book, I really started to get interested in what was driving the downsizing trend in America. And just for a moment of, you know, serious discussion here, you know, I really was inspired by things he writes about, which is, you know, you can't pin everything on just corporations in America. There's just a huge failure of the administration and particularly the Republican Party and our government right now, who is selling people short. What's happening is, you know, middle class jobs are disappearing. And at that same time, we haven't done anything to change the structure of, say, unemployment insurance, which is, as Robert Reich explained, it to me, was designed for you to tide you over while you get your old job back, till your old job comes back, or that same kind of position comes back at another country.
It wasn't designed to be used in between scripts.
Well, true. But this job, that for most people losing their job right now, a lot of these jobs, particularly in the manufacturing sector, which are a majority of these jobs disappearing now, these jobs aren't coming back. So you're seeing entire cities now that are particularly, it's very dramatic in Michigan right now with the effect of the layoffs and the loss of benefits by people who were formerly employed by GM and Delphi Corporation. Your house, let's say you lose your job and the company's going down the toilet, your house is valued less. You're going to have to move somewhere else when you sell your house.
Everything's mortgaged. You own nothing. You're just in debt.
You lose your health care. Yep. I mean, we're not dealing with these larger issues.
And now you can't even declare bankruptcy in this country with any real it's not easy to do it.
If you are an individual, of course. Of course, if you're a corporation the Delphi Corporation, it's perfectly legal in this country right now. And this is something, of course, that Professor Reich was explaining to me. It's perfectly legal for you to be a company and propose in your bankruptcy settlement, hey, we're going to save $500 million for our executives to reward them actually for driving the company into the toilet. And at the same time, we're going to fire 18,000 workers and cut everyone else's pay in half. So the people at the lowest end of the spectrum are really losing out. I mean, big surprise. And our administration is still allowing these things to happen.
Oh, now plus, with the immigration issue, it's escalated the argument around why wages go down and whether or not illegal immigrants should be allowed to stay or not is an issue on both sides of the aisle that's causing a lot of debate.
It's true. And, also something that I think is of great concern is that, of course, we know this, that we had the lowest unemployment since 2001. At the same time, the only people who've seen their wages rise in this country since 2001 are the top 5% of wage earners in this country. So as Reich was explaining it to me, there's a whole oligarchy being created in America today. And plus, the failure of our country to provide health care for us is actually
frightening.
It's also driving companies to downsize and outsource because we're expecting them to pick up that cost. And I think we have really facing these huge issues, and a lot of it actually deals with health care.
Sure,
and
Walmart,
provide that.
Walmart dumps their employees on the state governments.
Right.
It's fascinating.
Health care is really tied into the whole employment issue. And this is one of the reasons why I went and made a documentary. So what happened was, after collecting these funny stories, I went across the country. I went to job fairs. I went to downsizers. I talked to economists like Robert Reich. I talked to Ben Stein on the other side of the spectrum, who will really surprise you in my film, the things he says that he does not agree with the administration on, particularly on the lax bankruptcy policies of companies. And I was completely floored.
Fiscal conservatives hate these guys.
Well, you know what? I was really impressed by his comments. And I went and met people who lost their jobs all over the country, and it was very interesting.
So where do we see the documentary?
Hopefully later this year it'll be out. We're just making all that happen now. We were at the Aspen Comedy Festival doing, a special screening down at South by Southwest. But I have to tell you Robert Reich's firing story because it's really good. You ready?
Sure.
Can we? Okay.
Do you want me to hang out?
Would you stay for a while
show okay,
here?
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah.
Mark. So Robert Reich, first of all, he once had a job where his entire job, he was a gopher at an ad agency. Now, of course, think of this accomplished man. His job was to scoop poodle poop up for his boss. So he says his job as a pooper scooper prepared him for his career in government. So he had a job in the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
Okay. He was working for the Solicitor General's office at the Reagan administration. And as a young attorney, they asked him if he would argue in front of the Supreme Court to get rid of the 1st, 4th, 7th, 8th, and 9th amendments to the Constitution.
Who asked him to do that?
The Solicitor General's office.
That's insane.
I know. And so, this is a time when the entire country should stand up and cheer that you've been fired. And of course, as he talks about in the book, you don't get fired from the Solicitor General's office. When you have advanced degrees like that, what they say is, maybe you should look for something else.
They put you out to stud. No. Go make more professors. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. What they say is, maybe you should look for something else. And they know what they mean, and you know what they mean, and they know that that means you're fired.
Right.
So it's just one of those little ways that people get fired. I wasn't actually fired from that play. What I heard was they were going in a different direction, which means they want to get as far away from you as humanly possible. Oh, what direction are you going in? We can't tell you. Can I go? No. No. We're going without you.
In this business, it's ridiculous. You don't know when the process stops sometimes, when you have something in development or there's a script out there. You're working in development with a studio.
Right.
All of a sudden, one day you're like, does anyone know what's going on with this?
Yeah.
And then you call the guy, your contact at the studio, like, is this happening? It's like, oh, I don't think so. No one told you? Maybe you should call your manager.
We're going a different way.
Oh. So you want to hear why I got sent home from Australia?
Yeah, I really want to hear.
Horrendously embarrassing story. It's not unlike Bill Maher's story in your book, only I went to another country. Uh-huh. I was maybe a middle act, and somebody came to the Improv in New York City. I had about 25 minutes of material. He saw me do 10. He said, we want you to do a four-week run in Australia,
wow,
headlining, and we'll extend it to a fifth week. So I am a neurotic mess now. Then I knew in my heart there was no way I could headline, but I'm going to Australia to do it, okay? So I fly there. It's like 20 hours. I was living in San Francisco. I get to Australia right away. You know, they're driving on the other side of the street. And right away, I'm like, oh, I'm not home. And I can't.
Right.
It's like tomorrow home, and I can't call people. There are, kangaroos jumping around. The first night, I do a show that's like their David Letterman show. And that's, the desk is on the wrong side of the studio. So that's weird. I feel like I'm upside down. I can't call my wife because the time difference. I'm starting to melt.
Russell Crowe moment?
No, nothing like. He was on the talk show with me.
Oh, my
God. Russell Crowe. Was the guest on the talk show,
and he
had just done Romper Stomper. He was not a star. Right. So he's talking about the research he was doing for Romper Stomper. He said, I had to read books about Hitler. I had to read Mein Kampf. And I made a joke, like, it sounds like my book collection. Like, I thought it was really a cute joke. But he just looks at me like I just, like, crapped on the chair. And the entire audience is in Australia, and they're like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? So I'm like, oh, and then I haven't even done a gig yet. Oh, man, I'm going to have to finish this off the break now. I haven't even done a gig yet, and the first night I get there, here's the structure of the show. All right, the host is a comic, okay, and then the first act are these two women, kind of a burlesque thing. One has an accordion and they sing weird songs, and then they bring up a guy whose closer is escaping from a straitjacket on stilts. All right.
Oh my God.
Then they take a break. All right, and bring me on.
You didn't hallucinate all this?
No.
Real?
So I'm just coming unhinged, right? And we're doing a week of previews. We get to the Friday night, and I by the time I did the Saturday night show, the place was packed, and the only thing I heard during my hour on stage were the embers of my cigarette burning. All right? The next day, the guy takes me out to lunch and says, I don't think this is going to work out. I'm going to pay you for 3 weeks and send you home. We'll call it my mistake. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah. It was a mercy firing.
Exactly. Annabelle Gurwitch, thank you for being with us. You're charming. The book is great. Good luck.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll be back.
And now he's obsessed with Marion Davies' clitoris. Mark Maron.
Rosebud. Sorry. Hey, people. 53 past the hour. Man, that Annabelle Gurwitch is a pip, huh?
She's nonstop.
She's a pip, as they say. Pip's a good thing, not a bad thing. I enjoyed that. Folks, do this. Write your senators. Email them. Not your senators. These Democrats are on the Judiciary Committee. Leahy, Kennedy, Biden, Cole, Feinstein, Schumer, who I used to like, and now I don't know. He tried to stifle this Feingold questioning of John Dean tomorrow. They're going to be talking about surveillance, and they're going to be asking questions that could fortify or perhaps at least get some more people on board with the Feingold proposal for censure. I can understand if you're a Democrat who's on the fence because you've got a tight race with a Republican in your state, but if you're somebody who's solid in your standing, you should get on board with this. There is an NBC Wall Street Journal poll out now. 50% of Americans prefer a Democratic-controlled Congress. 50%, that's half, people. And out of the independents polled, 42% of independents favored censuring Bush. 47% of them said they favored impeaching the president. This would be a good move. This Feingold's got some spine, and I think that people should try to support at least interrogating some of the people that would know what's up with this. I mean, John Dean certainly worked for Nixon, would know, you know, what transgressions were done. And I think the censure is the right thing to do. So do that. See if you can write those guys, would you? And thank you, Jirogo, for the tip. Brian from Everett, are you there? Brian from Everett?
Yeah, is this the comedy show?
Oh, yes, it is, Brian. Hey, listen, dude, I want to just...
Sorry.
Can I just tell people who you are? Brian from Everett used to call our old show. He's got an inconsistent mental disposition. And
I had jokes about that, too.
I know. And he's up in the Seattle area, and occasionally he'll call with a little song. What do you got?
Who can laugh at a time like this, man? Buck Owens died.
I hear you. We got 2 minutes. Is there any way we can do it?
It's a two-minute song, and I know you have issues with Satan, right?
Yeah.
Because you do the Satan comedy.
Yeah.
And that's a niche. That's a niche of comedy.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do this is what I call Lullaby for Lucifer.
Okay.
And it's really after all the years of what Lucifer has done, it's about time he should take a nap. I think it goes in with some of your material too, right?
Okay, here we go.
The Dark Lord of Hades has prowled o'er the earth. Our satanic incubus swings a wide berth. But now the end of his calendar's near. The age of his evil will soon disappear. So he nestles on down with his hate and his fear. So it's a lullaby for Lucifer, you've had a long day. You seven-headed beast, the long night's on its way. You'll soon shrink back down deep into the South Pole. It's time to say night-night, go back in your hole. You'll sleep for 1,000 years with your black soul. Now Beelzebub's been a busy boy, preying on the weak. But his hot air balloon is beginning to leak. He went for the gusto, he surely did grab it. And he's nursing a wound, yes, he's got a bad habit. But he sure does look cute when he's digesting that rabbit.
Huh.
Oh, Satan's been mean since the Ancient of Days. He's inspired a great deal of Shakespearean plays. But it's now time to sing Obla-di, Obla-da.
Oh.
The story is turning into denouement. Mm. His eyes growing heavy, he's fading so far. So good night, you tuckered out tempest. It's sleepy time, turn out your light. In your scaly skin, you'll have a long rest.
Yeah.
Good night, good night, good night.
That's Brian from Everett, folks, and we're going to come back here. Thank you so much, Brian. That was beautiful and weird. You take care of yourself.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be back with Hamill on Trial with some more music. Stay with us.
Back to Mark Maron here live from Burbank, California, where everything happens, and I forgot what I was going to say. It's the Mark Maron Show.
Thank you. Hello, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? I think Annabelle Gurwitch is still out there talking. I think so. And it's sad because there's no one around. No, I shouldn't talk about her when she's not
Everybody
here.
Everybody listens.
Come on,
she's
man.
She's engaging.
I enjoyed her. I'm a big fan now. And I think I've met her once before, but I did know do know her husband. But that's the past. We're in the present now, my friend. I'll be honest with you. If it is done right, and I believe this to be true, nothing has more impact than music to mess with your head. Music has changed my life, I think, more than anything. And nothing stays, both politically, socially, it's raised my awareness. And there's certain music that throws a spell on me and makes me have feelings that are from the past that I can't identify.
Specifically what, Mark?
Which of those feelings?
No, well, what's music?
Well, to me,
if you were going to go home this evening, put something on, any genre, any year, listen to it in its entirety.
Let me introduce you. This is Hamill on Trial, Ed Hamill from Hamill on Trial.
How are you?
His record is Songs for Parents Who Enjoy Drugs. He's playing at the Roxy tomorrow night. What have I been listening to? What would I go listen to? I go right now. I seem to be, someone gave me a big collection, like sent me a huge CD, and there's a John Spencer Blues Explosion song on there that I'd never heard before and I like. I'm sort of a blues head.
Gotcha.
The ones that make me time travel are more kind of ethereal ones. Did you know, you ever know the band Buffalo Tom? They were out of Boston.
Sure.
For some reason, songs that I listened to when I was in college, I don't know if you've ever felt this, but certain music brings you to this space in your mind that's sort of elated and distant, and you can't quite identify it, but you feel good.
Yeah.
I just like certain chords trigger that in me. That's cool. What I'm talking about. But you, how many bands have you been in? Yeah, that one does.
Oh,
it,
good right? Lord. A lot of bands.
And you've come sort of full circle and you've landed. Did you sort of hit a wall and have a kid and realize I can do this by myself?
Oh, way prior to the kid.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
What was the moment of frustration where you just sort of said the hell with it?
It was less frustration than it was a realization.
Yeah.
That the bands I were in were not particularly distinctive.
Right.
And I was looking for an original voice.
Yeah.
And so I took a couple years off and tended bar, oddly enough, in a pretty tough joint. And always assuming, oddly, that I would make my career music, but not knowing how.
Oh.
And then very organically, where I was living at the time, Syracuse, New York, there was a local photographer who was a fan of the band. He was dying of cancer. They were doing a benefit for him and asked me if I would come play with, and I didn't have a band. They said, how would you feel about doing it with an acoustic guitar? And I didn't even own one at the time.
Right.
And I said, I'll give it a try. And as a joke, because all the musicians in town were going to be there sort of scrutinizing my very amateur performance, I called it Hamill on Trial.
Okay.
And I was offered a little record deal from my very first performance. So after years of being in a band and not getting any attention, I played one gig as an acoustic guy, so even an idiot like myself.
Look at that.
Figured, yeah.
So that moment of vulnerability and fear, you rose to the occasion and someone said, that's a guy.
I guess, yeah.
And you're with what record label?
Well, now I'm on Ani DeFranco's label, Righteous Babe.
And how is she a good person?
Wonderful.
Oh, that's nice. So I was listening to the CD in the car, and I got a kick. Not a lot of people write songs for people like who have had lives. And have kids. Like, I think you're of the same age I am, probably around the same generation.
Yep. 31.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. About 31. And,
I got a great face for radio. As I see you do. No offense. Yeah. No offense. We had a photographer here. Who would have known, right?
Yeah. Well, you're going to be up on the website in a minute.
Great.
But there was a sort of sketch artist. There's sort of a frankness to this song about what you should tell your kids. I thought it was kind of funny. Can you play it?
Absolutely.
What's it called?
Inquiring Minds. Because they ask questions, these children. Yeah. You got a kid, I got a kid. Are you gonna tell him the things you did? Tell him the truth about your sordid youth. If he wants to know, did you do blow? Did you get high and listen to the stereo? Nah, Pops, when's the first time you did a drug crime? I smoked my first J on my 11th birthday. In high school exams, how'd you stay up to read? The kid across the street dealt in excellent speed. And what class is this boring? Is mine out of day? Hey, most of the time I was tripping, so I really can't say. And Dad, let's see how truthful you are. Were you ever high behind the wheel of a car? Man, I thought I was flying a 747 when I sold that car. I think they scraped it for resin. And Dad, you courted Mom. How'd you make her your own? Well, we drink a lot of vodka. We do methadone. So when he asked me about my past and did I get high, I've been seriously thinking about my reply. I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie. Dad, did you ever do drugs? No way. Dad, you ever do it with any woman besides Mom? Did you ever see that Fellini movie, Satyricon? I was 13 the first time, so good I couldn't speak. They should have wrapped me in a hefty bag and drained me once a week. And Dad, what's the kinkiest that you ever got? Well, there was a mother and daughter upstate that were crazy, stupid, hot. There was this girl and her dog, but we won't get into that. There was these three dominatrixes in a one-room flat. Couple times in a church pew was a heavenly thing. And there was a girl named Ruth in the booth of the Burger King. My wife eating a hole through me with her evil eye. My kids got inquiries, you know they want an honest reply. I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie. Dad, did you have premarital sex? Absolutely not. Now come the tough questions daddy's gonna ask, cause all prosecutors say the hard stuff for last. Dad, did you ever steal from the store when you didn't have the bucks? Hey, from what I remember, most of the stuff just fell off of trucks. And Dad, did you ever own a gun? Well, it wasn't like I had a license for one. And Dad, did you ever steal an automobile for fun? Well, the owners wanna wanted it when we got done. And Dad, I heard you bartended in a place that dealt crack. Hey, we were just making sure our clientele would come back. He wants the truth, I look him in the eye. I set a good example, you know, I'm that kind of guy. I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie, I'm gonna lie. you ever do anything bad? Heck no. Wouldn't have been heck, Mark, but the FCC is knocking on your door.
I don't want to pay. All right.
Thank you.
Excellent. Have him on trial.
Thanks.
At the Roxy tomorrow night. Now, when you do a club like the Roxy, you just go up just you?
Oh, yeah.
And do you do a little...
We envelop them in sound.
With the one guitar?
Oh, yeah. Very big.
Oh, that's cool.
Very loud, yeah.
Do you do any monologue or...
Yeah, quite a bit.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And it just strings in.
Here's
and out.
Here's my opening one. Would you like to hear a little bit of it?
Sure, later.
You know what I miss these days that you don't see as much anymore? You used to see it all the time in the country. You don't anymore.
What?
We could use some, I think, now.
What?
Assassinations. You know what I'm saying?
That's your opening line.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think it's because in the old days, they used to have three names, like Lee Harvey Oswald,
sure.
Or, right?
Yeah.
Mark David Chapman, John Wilkes Booth. Maybe we get David Lee Roth to assassinate somebody now.
I think
80s metal guys. Ronnie James Dio would do it, right?
David Lee Roth might be about at the end of his rope, I think, about
now. I hear it's building.
You do?
I hear it's building.
So he got pissed off, I think, about something, and then he started getting honest. And
Howard had very nice things to say on TV about it takes a while to build an audience, as you know, I'm sure.
Well, and when we were building an audience, the rug was pulled out from under us, and I was put out here. It's interesting, though. It does take up to about 2 years, 3 years to even get a thing going.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have friends that are listening to him and really like him. So he's very knowledgeable, and an incredible encyclopedic knowledge of music, loves music.
He comes from a musical family. His uncle, Manny Roth, used to hang around the village gate.
Irish guy?
No, yeah, absolutely.
Killing you.
Bing!
Here's the sound effects guy when we need him.
Yeah, his uncle Manny, I think, was one of the original owners of the Cafe Wah where Hendrix played.
Sure.
And he actually...
Love Spoonful, yeah.
Right, and he actually managed Pryor before Pryor became Pryor.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, he comes
Pryor
from a show.
Pryor.
Yeah, so now we're talking about David Lee Roth for some reason. But do you do some... You do some political songs as well?
Would you like to hear one?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Kids in Politics.
All right. Hamel on trial.
Oh, you know what?
What?
I got to tell you. The funny word in here from the four-year-old boy, of course, would be a word that we can't say on the air.
Okay.
So we'll say heck again.
Okay,
why not?
Fine.
Okay?
All right, let's do it.
My son is more than one. He's more than two. He's less than three. He tries to talk to me about this, about that, about his coat, about his hat, about birds, about the weather. And he's putting words together, and he's forming little phrases, got little verbal phases, and he's challenging me. You know, he's got his own personality. When I tell him, little boys got to pick up their toys, well, what he then said exploded my head. He said, Dad, let me get this straight. The President of the United States, from everything I heard, is arguably the most powerful position in the world. You could have knocked me over with a feather. Listen to him putting those words together. That's pretty advanced noise. All I want him to do is pick up his toys. He said, we're over in Iraq, and there's no sign of turning back. Now, aren't these people dying on both sides, pain and crying? Ooh, well, that's a lot for a child of three. But I answered him, yes, honestly. And he said, Dad, am I out of my mind? But the weapons of mass destruction they did not find? I said, no, son, no. WMD was a no-show. And he said, Dad, they proved that Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 attack. I said, I can't argue with you, because everything that you say is true. And then from the mouth of the littlest of boys, he said, Dad, I ain't picking up my gosh darn toys. I said, fine. Doesn't take a lot of brains to see this new world chaos reigns. If it can't make sense no more, take off your diaper. Take a dump on the floor. Values, values, values. I said, we're getting in a sweat. What do you say we study the alphabet? He said, Dad, we've been over this before, but what do you say we go over it one time more? He said, Dad, you ain't no fool. Is there some kind of presidential school, some kind of test or exam to show that you're the qualified man? I mean, from everything I hear, let me see if I'm clear. People are voting him in because they want to socialize with him and a beer. Now, that's no qualification for a man to be leading a nation. What if you saw a guy from the bar emerging? You'd say, oh, he'd make a heck of a surgeon. He's a nice guy, although no education. I'm gonna let him do my wife's brain operation. Dad, I'm gonna hold off on class. You can stick the alphabet up your values, values, values.
We're down at the playground, run around safe and sound. The kids are on the slides and the swings, having fun falling down. They're only three or two, and they fight over toys as little kids do. I tell my son he's got to share. When he comes up with this, all I can do is stare. He said, I'm an isolationist, Dad. That kid made me really mad. I don't need him or NATO. God chose me, it's fate. Oh, values are tough to teach a child when the president is gone completely wild. I put my kid in his room and I lock the door. And I tell my wife I can't take it no more. Values, values, values.
All right. Hanalei Trial, tomorrow night at the Roxy here in Los Angeles, which was one of the great rock and roll pits, the Roxy.
Was. David Lee Roth.
Sure. They were all there at one point in time.
They were.
I think, Sam Kennison taped his first special there. And you were in Austin for how long? A couple years.
Before Brooklyn.
That's a great town.
Great town.
And now you're in Austining.
Now I'm in Austining, Sing Sing Prison.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for the support, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your songs and your humor, and have a great show tomorrow night.
Thank you, sir.
Hamel on Trial, the new album is Songs for Parents Who Enjoy Kids. What's the website, Hamel?
www.hamelontrial, H-A-M-E-L-L on trial.com.
There you go. It's coming up on about 19 past. Stay with us. The Mark Maron Show. Thank you.
His hair is actually thicker today than when he was 22. It's amazing. Mark Maron.
Is strangely blonde, my friend. Strangely blonde. You know, we've been talking about the immigration issue over the past couple of days. Some people see it as a wedge issue. You know, I see it as the Republicans having it both ways, depending on what their constituency is. I listened to Tom Hartman. I read an article he wrote today that basically says that the correct progressive approach to immigration is to stay with the laws that are on the books, deny the illegals jobs, chastise or criminalize employers who employ them, because basically what it's doing is it's lowering the minimum wage for American workers, and it is born of union busting. And it is not good for the country. And that, like Jim said yesterday, what needs to be reckoned with are the politics within Mexico and the repercussions of NAFTA. Now, there's somebody on the phone here. I've got a couple emails I want to read, but we have a caller. Let's go to Mary, who's in Los Angeles. Mary, it says on the screen here that you're challenging immigration reform on a grassroots level.
Yes. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I'm so happy you're talking about this issue, because it's so hot right now.
Yeah.
You know this. You know, me and my group, we're a local group of women in, you know, we're just a suburban community. We've been out at the protests. Mm-hmm. We're meeting with local immigrants, hearing their stories, supporting them. And it's just really important to open up a dialogue with them about, you know, what immigration reform really means for our community.
Wow, so that's great. So you started a group in your community that is, is against the reform of immigration?
Definitely, definitely. You know, there's lots of local chapters that are starting up, you know, in areas all over different neighborhoods all over Los Angeles, you know, probably in yours. Where do you live, Mark?
Well, I live in Highland Park.
See? Okay, so you could start one yourself.
Uh-huh.
Because they're popping up all over. These are just everyday neighborhoods, you know, Newport Beach, Brentwood, Santa Monica, you know, just regular neighborhoods.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what exactly are you talking about at these groups?
Okay, well, you know, a lot of people are bringing up to us that immigrants are stealing jobs from Americans, but, you know, a lot of Americans, let's face it, are choosing not to have those types of jobs.
Mm.
And so, you know, you see these Americans that refuse work sitting at the freeway exits, you know, looking all gruff and homeless and, you know, Brad Pitt bearded, you know, holding up signs that they're, you know, wounded veterans, and they're asking for your sandwiches, you know. I mean, and you know what? Look next to that guy, that self-righteous homeless guy, and see the Mexican guy working his butt off, you know, and he's selling his flowers and his fruit. And, you know, they are such a hard-working people, you know.
So, wait a minute. It sounds like that you don't really care about these people at all, Mary, and that you just want cheap labor.
Oh, my my God, no. I do care about them. You know, I've talked to a lot of Mexican families who, you know, would rather work hard, you know, in my own neighborhood. They work in my neighborhood and would rather do that in America than in Mexico. You know, they get a good cardio workout, you know, doing the landscaping and pushing the babies around. It's science.
So what is your group? Is it just a bunch of housewives who don't want to lose their nannies and landscapers? Is that the deal?
Mark.
What?
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Have you ever tried working with a white American nanny?
I know.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
And you'll be, you know, they want minimum wage. Uh-huh. They want you to give them a salary and be all legal with everything.
Yeah.
You know, don't talk to me about pool cleaners. A friend of mine has this guy, you know, bless his heart. He'll do your hedges for Pizza Hut coupons. I love it.
Oh, my God.
I love it, Mark.
I can't believe I'm having this conversation. Now, who are you? I mean, what is this?
I am a concerned citizen, and I'm trying to do my part, just like you. We're on the same side here, okay?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
My nanny has been with our family for 5 years.
Right.
You want to tell me I don't care about her?
Uh-huh.
She's been to Tahoe and Aspen and Hawaii, and she's living this amazing life that she never would have lived if she got deported. She's the hardest working woman I've ever known.
Yeah.
Because she has to be, or I'll call INS on her little immigrant ass.
All right. See, so now you're just a racist, okay?
No,
you are.
No. I'm calling them like I see them. It's like she's an immigrant.
Uh-huh.
She's illegal.
Yeah.
She's both of those things.
Yeah, right.
And that's what I'm trying to change. That's what our group is trying to change. And I don't want to have to use those threats on her. I love her. I want her to feel free to live and work for other families and sell her handiwork.
All right. Look, we're out of time. You know, I'm sure there's something else you can spend your time doing tonight, like taking care of your own kids. How would that be?
No. Oh, no. No. I'm not even home. I'm in Vegas right now. I've been listening to the show on the internet. Pilar's with the babies. I could talk to you all night long.
Oh, that's really a shame. All right. Well, have fun in Vegas, okay? Wow. You know, why'd I let that go on forever?
Did she say Pilar?
Yeah, that's the woman's name. We'll be back. Yeah, we'll be back with hopefully the Wheel of Anger. All right.
Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, Wheel of Anger's coming.
Okay.
Now, you can find him in your local Yellow Pages under Funny Mark Maron.
Right next to you, Jimmy. Right next to you.
Hey, thanks, man.
You bet. Got to get Steve Buscemi on the phone here. But in the meantime, my friend, you got, what do you say we give the old Jim Earl Wheel of Anger a spin? And the Wheel of Anger lands on parking.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Is that where we're going?
Parking.
No, you don't got to tell me.
Oh, man. I'm steamed.
Lay it on me.
All right. Mark, I know I told you yesterday I was going to talk about parking, about how my neighbors insist on blocking my tiny driveway when they come home late at night from God knows where, even though there's a no parking sign clearly posted on the garage, about how infuriating it is not to be able to even fit my little Honda Civic into my own space because it's cordoned off by a late model Ford LTD and a Humvee. Mm. But tonight, I'm not going to talk about that. You know why?
Why, Jim?
Because that's trivial compared to all the other important things going on in the world.
Yeah.
Like this unjust and illegal war in Iraq, where thanks to the insurgency, a new parking space opens up every 5 minutes. Or the tragic legacy of Terry Schiavo, who, by the way, didn't have to worry about parking for over 10 years. Or the plight of injured and kidnapped journalists like Jill Carroll, whose family had to move her car every damn week so she wouldn't get a street cleaning ticket. These are important issues. More important than my stupid parking problem. I should be thankful for all the people in my neighborhood. If it weren't for all those cramped garages being converted into overpriced apartments, overburdened landlords wouldn't have the funds to file eviction notices against me for complaining about gas leaks. But I guess I'm spoiled, Mark.
Mm.
See, when I was little, everybody had a parking space. Now it's so bad, the sex offender living in the van across the street from me has to double park to get a hard-on. I guess what I'm trying to say is this, Mark. This isn't the same country I grew up in.
Yeah.
That's what I want to talk about, not parking. Particularly the issue of immigration. Millions of illegal aliens cross our borders every year. And that's a huge concern. But then the question comes to mind, how can we label human beings illegal? Are these not people who need to be treated with respect, dignity, and compassion for the horrible circumstances that drove them here?
Mm.
Which brings me to my next point.
Yeah.
A lot of them drove here, Mark.
Yeah.
These people are stealing our parking spaces. Screw the jobs they're taking. I don't know about you, but they could offer me $400 an hour, and I still would not bust Rosie O'Donnell's table. I've seen that cow eat, and she's a spitter. In conclusion, if you're going to block my driveway, at least do it in a car I respect. Maybe a hybrid or a steam car. What the hell is it with Leno anyway? He's got a warehouse full of vintage electrics and Stanley steamers. Why not donate a few to these poor undocumented workers so they don't have to break their backs every day picking his crappy monologue jokes? In the meantime, America, stay out of my driveway. Or I'll be forced to leave a witheringly sarcastic note under your windshield wiper again when no one's looking. You heard me. You've just taken a ride on my wheel of anger.
I think that was good, man. That was good.
You've been earled.
You can come park on my street anytime, buddy.
I've been there. You can't park on your street. It's all curvy and it's got a lot of inclines on it.
What's the matter? You got a clutch car?
Yeah, I got a clutch car.
Wow, you're old school, man. I think we should go out on the Tonight Show line next week and record some things with people on the line. What do you think?
That's a good idea.
All right, let's do. We got Steve Buscemi on the phone. Steve Buscemi is arguably one of the most recognizable character actors in the movie business today. He's been in some of my favorite films: Fargo, Barton Fink, Con Air. He's appeared in this and this season and the last season of The Sopranos. And as we speak, Lonesome Jim, a film he directed, is open now. Thanks for joining us, Steve Buscemi.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. You know, we met once. It was a very awkward evening. You were with Maggie Estep. You came to see me perform at Luna, and I went on a yelling spree about marriage.
Yeah.
And I walked up to you afterwards, and you had that look of like, yeah, a nice try. Yeah, marriage is hard, I think, is what you said. not the response I was looking for, but it was good anyways. So now, will you just tell me briefly, you know, what the movie's about?
It's about a guy named Jim who tried to make it as a writer in New York. He's from Indiana,
mm-hmm.
and he's, you know, couldn't really hack it and has to move back home with his parents.
Oh, man, that's too close to home for me,
yeah.
I tell you. So he hit the wall and he had to run away.
He had to go home and sort of, as he puts it, have a nervous breakdown, knowing that, you know, he could only do that around his family. But then, of course, he resents them for it, that they know him so well.
That sounds like a very compelling movie. The reviews have been great, and a lot of people, like usual, when a movie is too real for them to handle, make assumptions that it's about losers or depression or it's dark. I just think that's the human condition, don't you?
I absolutely do. I never, you know, see these characters as losers. I just see, you know, I mean, I'm just interested in characters that are sort of, you know, that struggle finding their place within this world, and I think probably for good reason.
I'll tell you, man, when the main character in your last film, the one you directed, Trees Lounge, found that his place was on that that bar stool, that was, I still can't get that out of my head.
Yeah, I wonder if he's still there myself.
I imagine if he lived, he is still there.
Yeah, you know, I remember when we were making that, when we were, you know, sort of scouting for the bars, even though the Trees Lounge was a real bar, it had, you know, it had been bought and sold, so we were looking for another bar, and we're in there one afternoon, and this guy was sitting at the bar, he was my age, and he asked me what the movie was about. And I pretty much described his life to him, you know, telling him that that's what the movie was about. And he looked at me and he said, "Why would anybody want to see that?"
That's amazing. That's hilarious, because yeah, those are the same people that call the characters that that you and I find engaging and honest losers.
Right.
Because they don't go to the movies for that experience.
No, of course not. They want to escape that experience.
Yeah, boy, they're a bunch of cowards, aren't they?
What a loser.
Yeah, those guys are losers for not facing the truth. that life is meaningless and it's a jip.
Yeah.
Well, look, I really like your work as an actor as well, and I know you've done you were on the last season of Sopranos, and I saw you last week on the Sopranos, and I just found out that you actually directed 5 episodes in total or so.
I have one coming up, which is episode 5, uh-huh. and it is the 4th one that I've done since season 3.
Is directing The Sopranos, I would assume that's different than directing regular television, which I think you've had some experience in as well.
Well, I've been lucky in the thing that the first thing I did was Homicide, and that was, I really liked that show. It was a wonderful show, and I did a couple episodes of Oz. But Sopranos, yeah, I don't think it gets much better than that, and it's not like... I don't see it as a TV show. It's like they shoot a mini feature each episode.
Right. Absolutely. So now, did the acting gig on The Sopranos come about when the creator saw you behind the camera and said, why don't you just do it, Steve?
I think pretty much. I just sort of hung around enough that and hinted, I guess, enough that that they finally hired me.
How come you didn't place yourself in this new film?
I didn't really think there was a role for me. The producers asked me to consider the role of Uncle Evil, the moped riding pot dealer that works at the factory. I couldn't imagine anybody doing it better than Mark Boone Jr., who's an actor that I've have known for 20 years, and we used to work together back in the East Village days, doing theater together, writing and performing our own work, and I just thought that he would be incredible with this character.
You were a firefighter, right?
I was, yeah.
And do you find that your experience as a firefighter at all helps you in show business?
Is there a survival element? I used to do stand up. And I used to say that it was scarier going on stage than going into a burning building. So I give you a lot of credit.
Oh God, it's crazy. I have to assume though, on some level too, when you considered yourself for your own film, that you realize that you're in just about every other movie made today. And you thought, well, maybe I should just not be in the one I'm making. It's an amazing to me that there's a couple of guys, and you're one of them, that have just redefined character acting and can do just about anything. And I find that I think you're equally compelling as a good guy as a bad guy. What do you prefer playing?
The bad guys are fun to play, but it doesn't matter to me as long as that the characters are. Complicated or going through something, and a lot of it depends on who's doing the film. And I've been fortunate to work with a lot of great writer directors, and so it's always fun to work with people whose work I admire and bring together really interesting actors and have a great cast.
Do you have a go-to guy that is also a film director, perhaps that you worked with, or a friend that you go to when you have a problem?
There's, two directors that I worked with, Alexander Rockwell and Tom DiCillo. Tom did Living in Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex did In the Soup, and a number of other films. But I find them really helpful when I'm in post-production, in the editing process. Those are two guys that I look to come see the film before the picture is locked and just get their take on it, because they're both really insightful.
That's great. And do you have a movie that you find yourself going to for inspiration in terms of a favorite film or some film director of the past that inspired you?
Well, I always mention Cassavetes because I think he, just did incredible work and sort of, practically invented his own genre of film.
Yep.
And so he's always an inspiration because his films, each time I see them, they're still unpredictable,
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
And the personalities just crackle. The humanity peels off the screen there.
Yeah, and you feel like you're living through an experience with these characters. So even though I don't think anybody can do what he did, he's always somebody that I, you know, sort of look up to.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing that you put yourself through when you watch one of his films. And you can't really blurb like that in current movies. You can't say exhausting but worth it.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that would really sell the picture. So now I have to assume that now you have one of those faces where you walk down the street, and whether or not they know your name, you must constantly, especially, you live in New York, right?
I do, yeah.
Still, you must constantly get that, oh, there's that guy, Fargo! Do you get that? What's the one that they yell at you?
Well, it's always a relief when they know a film that I've been in. It's
yeah.
It's only when they say, oh, it's you. Well, what did I see you in?
Yeah. Or, how do I know you?
Right. but yeah, you know, I guess in the past few years, it's been the Big Lebowski, which is, I think, just grows in stature with, you know, each passing year.
I had to be reintroduced to that movie. I'm a big Coen Brothers fan.
Right.
I've seen your work in their movies. I like their movies. And I watched the Big Lebowski, and I got to be honest with you, the first time I saw it, I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And some of the guys I work with, they were like, well, what are you, stupid? That's the best movie ever made. So I had to go back and rewatch it, and now I own it, and I have to watch it once every few months.
Right.
So next time I see you, I'll go, Big Lebowski guy!
Good. Just don't tell me to shut up. You know?
I don't come down to where you work. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Steve Buscemi. It's great talking to you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And now he's got a face full of whiskers. Mark Maron.
Hey, folks. Coming up on the Short Order News. Tomorrow we're going to read some of your letters in response to the immigration issue. I tell you, today when I got up and I saw that Jill Carroll was released by her kidnappers in Iraq. She's kidnapped on January 7th. The first response I had, you know, and it wasn't that I'd been following the story, but I was like, well, thank God. You know, I mean, the hostage thing scares the hell out of me, and I was relieved. I was relieved that this woman was released. And it was amazing to me that some of these right-wing radio retards immediately jumped on this as a political opportunity to sort of be racist and also to justify the point of media bias. I mean, you know, Imus's producer said she looked like the kind of woman who would wear a suicide vest. One right-wing blogger called her a willing participant. John Podhoretz in the National Review basically said she was probably messed up in the head for claiming she was treated well and dressed as she was. I think they're trying to make an example out of her to fit this media bias frame. But the bottom line is what these right-wingers did was they blamed the victim. They made her a villain. They sacrificed one of our own, which to me, just for political reasons, it made me cross that line from anger to feeling ashamed of my damn country because people like this are allowed to have cultural dominance, allowed to talk like they're talking. I mean, look, I noticed in the photos she was wearing a Muslim headdress, but my initial reaction was it wasn't why they do that to her, why she dressed like that, or that she was one of them now. I mean, I knew what this woman was doing. I knew she dressed like that out of respect for the customs of the country that she was writing about, that it enabled her to communicate with Iraqi peoples, that she was empathetic and concerned and trying to show a different point of view on this war, and it probably saved her life. But I'll tell you, these bastards, to blame the victim and use her, they should be ashamed of themselves, and they should be ashamed of themselves every day. But I don't want to – let's do the jokes. A lot happened in the world today, and I want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. Iran has told the IAEA that it will not suspend its uranium enrichment as demanded by the UN Council. The IAEA had no response to Iran, although an IKEA in Burbank kept getting phone calls that confused the delivery department. At the IKEA. Yeah. President Bush took a tour of the ancient Mayan ruins of Mexico today after visiting the infamous Well of Sacrifice, where great numbers of young women regularly sacrificed their lives for rain. Bush returned to Cancun, where great numbers of young women regularly sacrificed their virginity for beer. A park in Florida has become inundated with the poop of thousands of federally protected cormorants. According to locals, the road alongside the stricken park is known as Poop Alley. Man, what are the odds of that kind of thing happening, you know, right next to Poop Valley? You know, I don't know.
The odds are pretty slim on that one.
What, am I missing something here?
What a coincidence.
It's weird.
Poop Alley, right next to all this poop happening?
I know, and they poop right, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. All right, so tomorrow, I'm going to read some letters about immigration. We're going to have Robert Wool. We're not done. We're not done. This is the second time. That's so awkward. I mean,
it's an auric.
But we're not done. Robert Wool is going to come over right after he does Real Time with Bill Maher. And again, I didn't get angry tonight. I had a good time. I hope you guys had a good time. Robert Wool's pretty funny. He's been around for a long time. He's got a new show. He's very funny sometimes. I like him. I remember seeing him on The Dating Game when I was like 10. He's a smart guy. He's a good talker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I think he's very funny, too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Good night, sheeple.
I think he's funnier than you think he's funny.
Yeah, there's really Hollywood Nights. Good night, sheeple. What'd I do?